You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of Cattails. He's the self-confessed Ronnie Corbett of the bass-playing world, and with a career in the music industry spanning almost 40 years, Grammy-winning Guy Pratt has a few stories to tell. The chosen bassist for many of the world's elite musicians, he's played on countless hit records with Madonna, Michael Jackson, Brian Ferry, Robert Palmer, Iggy Pop and Elton John, to name a few. His latest project is being cast as a member of a supergroup with Pink Floyd's drummer Nick Mason and the band Saucerful of Secrets. But there's even more to Guy than that, including acting, writing and even stand-up comedy. This is The One with Guy Pratt. Hi, Guy. What a career you've had. I mean, it's years since I met you. It feels like it's a lifetime ago, but I'm thinking it's probably only about 5 years ago. And it was a fleeting moment at Vowood Festival in North Norfolk when I saw you.
Oh, yeah, that was great fun.
It was a good gig, wasn't it? You were doing your little...
I was doing my one-man show.
I know, which was incredible. So how did you move then from being, you know, bassist in some of the, you know, massive bands that you've got them, fabulous names in your archive there, to doing stand-up? I mean, how, you know, what a transition.
Yeah, well, I mean, I sort of stopped working and everything, and I mean, sort of moved away from bass playing. I had a studio and I was writing music for TV, and I was quite happy doing that, but then it just sort of dried up and I was sort of out of options. And I'd always wanted to do something in comedy. I've always known a lot of comedians, and I've chipped in little things here and there to scripts and sketches and things, and I just sort of thought, well, you've got all this material, which is your life, and no one has ever sort of done anything like that. And so I thought, because the only shows there'd ever been before like that were by artists, by, say, Ray Davis or someone like that. So the thing, you have to be, if you're interested in that artist, it's fantastic. Whereas I thought the thing with mine is who the hell has got stories about Whitesnake and the Smiths?
Incredible.
So, the best description I had of it is people say, is all it is I'm just doing what I do down the pub.
Yes, really. Love it.
Oh, that's funny. Only, hopefully, with no one interrupting.
A bit of heckling going on, but occasionally you can deal with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was the joke. It was like you sort of you've got two choices. You can either be that bloke down the pub who everyone goes, "Oh, don't get inside," or you can try and charge people money.
The money sounds a good option to me, Guy, I tell you.
Yeah. But then the book came from it. I mean, because it actually started. I started trying to write a book first. I really didn't enjoy writing because I sort of thought, but I really like telling. I don't like typing, and I really like shouting. So that's why I did the stand up instead. And then because that did really well, I then got asked to write the book, and the book did really well. And so here we are. Although I'm kind of, it's quite interesting. I stopped drinking last year and become really Pavlovian. It's like I can't go on stage without a drink. I can't for music. I don't need to drink at all. I never did. But I have this weird thing where I know I can do it without a drink, but it's so tight. And then you get up on stage, and it's got to the point where it really wasn't very healthy. And I need a drink to get on stage. I then tell all these stories about this guy getting really drunk, and then everyone wants to have a drink with the guy who told all the great drinking stories. And
there's so the irony.
So I need to... Also, I look at... Once you stop drinking, you start seeing some of those stories in a slightly different light. You know, it's kind of... This is clearly someone who's on a journey downhill. So, which luckily I've, you know, pulled out of. So I am going to do it again, but I need to find a way back in, you know. Also, I can't tell the Madonna story again. I can't tell Michael Jackson. Also, some of it is like, it's, you know, can you tell funny stories about Michael Jackson now? I mean, can you go on one, two? I mean,
yes, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Really,
it is tricky. I'd rather not be involved in that debate.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but it is still part of history, and it's part of your history, and you've got some fabulous names that you've worked with, so you've got to tell their stories. You know, they're still part of your life, aren't they? Your journey.
Yeah, but I'm kind of hoping, because the band I've got now, you know, Nick Mason, Source from the Secrets, which is possibly about the most fun thing I've ever done, if I'm honest. And it's so nice and genteel. So, and I was kind of thinking, if I could come up with either a book or a show about this, it would be a completely different sort of style of comedy. I mean, it'd be kind of less the young ones and more it shouldn't happen to a vet. It's also terribly genteel, and, you know.
It's come of age, hasn't it, obviously?
Yeah, exactly.
So how did all this begin then? Because you've been playing bass for absolutely ever, haven't you? And then suddenly, I suppose it might have been the right place at the right time. You tell me, Guy, how did you go from just, you know, playing in, let's say, in your bedroom or whatever, to suddenly playing with these massive names?
Well, it was, this was back in the days when you could go and squat in Notting Hill, which is what I, you know, did when I was a teenager. It's quite ironic. My fiance lives quite about 50 yards away from my first ever flat that I lived in when I was a starving musician, which is now on the same street as Hugh Graham.
Terrific.
it's extraordinary how it's changed. I was trying to join bands. I was just looking for bands to be in. And it just didn't occur to me to do anything else at all. And my first proper real, well, I started, that's when, because I was best friends with Youth, mm-hmm. who at that time was in Killing Joke. And then I started Brilliant with him, but then that wasn't really working out. And I mean, my first proper gig, the first person who actually put me on a plane to go anywhere was Sylvain Sylvain from the New York Dolls.
Right.
Which is great, because that just gives me punk credibility for my
Doesn't
whole
it
life.
Just?
That was
my
just,
God,
that
yeah.
taken care of. And then I somehow got asked to join this Australian band, Ice House, because they were looking for a bass player. They couldn't find, and they were a very pretentious new wave. And what could be more pretentious than having an English bass player?
Yes.
So it basically, if that was the fit, then they had a hit single over here. Then we supported David Bowie on tour. Whilst we were doing these festivals in Germany, Robert Palmer saw me, liked the cut of my jib. He invited me to the Bahamas. We ended up co-writing a song that ended up on the Power Station. And then it was just, you know, after that, it was just, woof, off it went.
Incredible,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a kind of story that doesn't happen now, though, isn't it? It was of that moment.
It wouldn't. I mean, I've got my... because I get a lot of young people asking me for advice and everything, but I have no idea. I'm sure if I was young now, I would have no interest in being a bass player, because it's... Because there was this... Being a sideman in the 80s, it was incredibly well paid and incredibly glamorous. And whereas now, it's just like being in a musical or something.
Yeah.
It's like being in Lion King, or like, I really don't see what the appeal is. And there's literally no money. And so, unlike All Us Lot, I think the thing is, most modern musicians have a love and a passion for music, which I find odd.
Yeah.
So, you know, but no, because, you know, my son has a band, and he's a very gifted songwriter and a great singer, but I don't recognize that business, because there isn't really a music business apart from hip hop and stuff. It's the music business is not its own thing. It's just another wing of showbiz.
Yeah.
I mean, there's literally no difference to being a pop star or being in a soap, you know, culturally.
Yeah.
So it hasn't got its own territory anymore, I don't think. Also, what's great is how everyone has access to everything. I mean, anyone can make a film and show it to the world, you know, with their phone. I mean, in that way, I mean, the way people are able to express themselves is infinitely better. But it also means you've got, but there isn't the filter. You have to wade through so much stuff to find, you know, the stuff that's speaking to you.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? You've got the masses and masses of stuff, but not necessarily good stuff. You know,
no, exactly.
You know, my dad used to give me a great line saying, you know, it's shit, but it's good shit. You know, you need to have.
Yeah, I know exactly what he means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now there's just so much shit and not good shit anymore. You know, and that's the problem, isn't it? So in terms of all these wonderful names that you've played with, and I mean, I think that's the beauty of what you've done, is in some respects, I'm looking from the outside here, I think it's much better to be able to play with a plethora of people that you have than to have just one band that you're associated with. Is that better or worse?
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, definitely, because a lot of it is I find as much fun in trying to sort of sound authentic playing a style of music as just being Mr. Integrity and no, this is what I play. You know, I love the idea of, I love trying to be a sort of hair metal bass player, and I love trying to be Peter Hook. I love all those things, really appeal to me. And also, I guess I get quite bored quite quickly, so I like having lots of things to look at. But then, you know, I do have this, but what is nice is I have this sort of, now it's an over 30-year association, it's 33 years now, association with Pink Floyd, and I've sort of been in every, you know, now being in a band with Nick, having done Pink Floyd and David. And that's a really nice thing to have sort of bubbling in the background as kind of, that's my sort of linchpin. Not that, I mean, certainly not financially.
Well.
Between tours. But I quite like having my sort of, my flag tied to that mast.
And what a great mast to be with, you know, associated with. It's wonderful, isn't it? But you've got some great names as well, other than Pink Floyd. You've got Robert Palmer, Roxy Music, Brian Ferry, Jimmy Page. I mean, crikey, I can't go on. Madonna, we said earlier, Michael Jackson, you know, blimey. I mean, if you had to choose one of those, come on, this is like trying to choose your children, isn't it? With your favourite child here.
It's not possible.
It is
not really possible. I mean, because, you know, I mean... you know, because I've been doing these videos, these YouTube things.
Yes.
So, which has been great fun, because I had loads of people getting, it was quite a funny thing when the lockdown started, where a lot of people, those of us who don't have conventional day jobs, a lot of people were in a way sort of quite excited. Oh, what am I going to do? We're going to have to find something to do. And, so loads of musicians started doing tutorial stuff. And I had loads of people saying to me, why don't you do bass lessons? I thought, because I can't think of anything I'd less rather do. And also I thought, I actually can't, because I don't really know what I do. I'm not a properly trained conventional musician. But I thought, what I can do is I can show you my, you know, best known lines. And tell you a little bit about them. So that's got a little element of the sort of the stand up in it. So it's still the stuff I love. And that's been great. So for doing that, the one thing that it has become apparent, I mean, obviously my proudest moment is Like a Prayer.
Yeah.
That's definitely the one that tops it.
Right, okay. So why that one particularly? Because the commercialism, because or Madonna, or...?
No, because, it's one of those great things that, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, realising what a culturally important record it was. It was a huge thing. There was a controversial video. She lost her deal with Pepsi. It was the album when it was her doing a George, as they say now, you know, a la George Michael. It's the album where she became a grown-up. I mean, it is an accepted one of the great pop records of all time. And the bass on it is fucking insane. You know, it's like no one gets to play something like that. Because records like, when someone like Madonna makes a record, you know, it's the record is merely a vehicle for the artist. The idea that any musician is allowed a performance of any sort is ridiculous, because it's all about, you know, the artiste. So, I mean, because I can't even really remember doing it. You know, I still love the thing of she invited me to the studio to hear the mix. And I sat down next to her and I genuinely said to her, God, Madonna, that bass is amazing. Who did it? And she went, you, dummy!
That's wonderful, isn't it? Why don't we listen to a little bit of that now, and then we'll be right back soon with a bit more chat. God.
Hi, I'm Guy Pratt, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
That must have been quite surreal at the time, but looking back, it must be, in some respects, even more surreal, thinking, was that really me?
No, absolutely. Yeah, it was. I mean, and that whole period, I mean, I was living in LA then. Well, I wasn't living in LA. I just flew to LA, and all people, I kept getting asked. I mean, you know, I spent 3 months doing a Robbie Robertson album, and that was, you know, I was doing... I did 2 albums with Madonna. I did the Time and A thing. It was not, I mean, my imposter syndrome was through the roof. I mean, the whole time I was there, I was just like, what am I doing here? I'm playing with proper grown-ups, you know, people who play on Steely Dan records. And you know, the only thing I'd going for me was I was infinitely better dressed than any of them.
But you see, that's coming from England, you see, that's the thing, isn't it? Bit of style. Wonderful. So you mentioned Madonna there and Like a Prayer. What other key moments would you say, do you know what, that was a defining moment in my career?
Well, that I would say, obviously getting the Pink Floyd shout. Working on Riptide, the Robert Palmer album.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was actually invited by my bass idol, Bernard Edwards from Chic, who was producing it, who, for some reason, who sacked Robert's band, brought in all his guys, and said, that English kid of yours, I like him, get him in.
Wow.
And, you know, I was 23.
God, dear. That's amazing, isn't it?
You never know how young you are until you're old.
Yes, that's right. Because you're still feel the same.
When you're 23, you're not going, oh my God, I'm only 23. Yeah, you're a big boy.
You think you know it all, don't you? Whatever age you are, you feel the same, don't
exactly.
you? Oh, wow, but what an absolute accolade.
Yeah, the only thing that life has taught me is that five years ago you is a wanker, and in 5 years' time you now is a wanker.
We can't win, can we, really?
No, exactly.
That's the way to look at it. But look, you've not only played with some great people, you've also written some great music as well, haven't you? I mean, you've had a number one in the UK for a start with Jimmy Nail, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah. My hits tend to be novelty records. I mean, my two biggest hits are That Ain't No Doubt and Vindaloo. So...
But both classics.
It's quite funny. I haven't got quite the sort of meaty... meaty portfolio of songs that I have of bass playing.
But you know, Vindaloo's a classic, isn't it? I'm singing it in my head.
Yeah, I'm incredibly proud of it.
Yeah,
the greatest punk football record ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And why not? So how did that one come about? I mean, that's just a bit of a sort of a left side thing coming out of nowhere, isn't it?
That just came from me living in the Groucho Club, basically. That's all it was. It was just, you know, me and a load of some pissed idiots in the Groucho Club. It was Alex and Keith had this idea for a song, and I had a studio, and a couple of them came back to mine, and we just sort of put it down in an evening, and then Damien Hunter came up with a cover for it, and just off we went. And it was a punky week period where you basically woke up in the morning, laughed all day, went to bed, woke up the next morning, laughed all day, went to bed, woke up the next morning, laughed all day.
Do you know, you can't complain at a career like that, can you, really? I mean, that sort of
opportunity.
No, not at all.
But, I mean, what people don't realize is an awful, awful lot of time. I'm so prepared for this, for the lockdown, because I have spent so much time sitting at home doing nothing.
Yeah.
You know, people have no idea. Because the funny thing is, it's all very well having this great big list of names, but what people forget is like, oh, my God, you work with Iggy Pop. It's like, well, yes, I have worked with Iggy Pop, but not really. I played on a song.
Yeah.
I never met him.
Yeah.
It took 3 hours. And, you know, there's a lot of artists. Because it used to be when I was doing lots of sessions, you know, it was producers I worked for. I had two or three producers I worked for. And I turn up and I go, who's this? It's Jimmy Somerville. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I play on the record. And that was it. And so but people think, you know, whereas where it says on my... You know, my resume, Brian Ferry. Yeah, Brian Ferry. That's years of touring and making records and stuff like that. Where it's, you know, Iggy Pop. It's 2 hours.
Yeah.
One afternoon.
Absolutely.
In
yeah.
fact, funnily enough, since I moved to Brighton a year or so ago, I was in my local health food shop and Jimmy Somerville was in there, and I'd never met him. I went, "Hi, Jimmy. Sorry, you don't know me, but I played on a number one of yours."
That's wonderful. And what did he say? I hope he thanked you for it.
He went, no, he was like, yeah, he seemed a bit puzzled. Oh, great. which I'm, you know, is a completely understandable response.
Yeah, this is the thing that people don't appreciate with the music business. It is a business at the end of the day, isn't it? And you're brought in for the skills that you've got, and that's what you do, and then off you go. And
exactly.
It's not the same glamour that people expect, is it?
No. But, well, you know, listen, I'm perfectly happy with the level of glamour I've been subjected to.
Yeah. Good. I don't think you could have any more, let's be honest. There's got to be some glamour in all that. Exactly. If you've been put on a plane and flown over to the US to play with Madonna, come on, it can't be that bad, yeah. Can it?
Exactly.
But, you know, your book, I've been listening to some of your book, which is absolutely incredible. It's a little while ago since you wrote that now. Are you thinking of maybe doing a follow-up one to that?
I started a follow-up. I did actually start to write a novel, but you've got to be really clever to write a novel and have all that story stuff. So I gave up on that. But so yeah, I'm just not a natural writer. I mean, I know I'm not bad at it, but I just find that there's literally no displacement activity that I won't indulge in before I actually write something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the only reason the last book got written I found that, you know, the way to write a book is basically a publisher gives you some money. And then they say, and then we'll give you the rest of the money when you give us a finished book. And if you don't give us a finished book, you have to give that money back. And so you know what happens? You write a book.
You write something, don't you? Whatever that is, you'll write.
Yeah.
So My Base and Other Animals, which is, of course, your book that you've currently got, is still available to buy, isn't it? And also as an Audible version, which I think was terrific.
Yes. Well, the joke about that is that, yes, it was read by me. But I actually had a filthy cold when I did it, so it sounds like it's read by Melvin Bragg.
It could be worse. It could be worse. So, of course, your tour has now been postponed, unfortunately.
I mean, hopefully we're back out in October.
Yes, yeah.
I was very actually pleased with the management that we actually managed to go and rebook the whole thing before we announced, you know, that we had to cancel these dates.
Yeah.
So that was brilliant. It was really nice to be able to go in with, we're not doing these breaks, but we're doing these.
Yes.
But everyone's tickets are covered, and so that's really nice.
Well, that's good. I mean, I've got the dates here in front of me here that you've got down so far, which are October onwards, aren't they? And, of course, we're talking here about Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets, which is all about Pink Floyd, and you're up there doing a lot of vocals as well as the
bass. Yes, I know. I'm fronting a band with my best mate. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's so much fun, and it's such hard work. That's what's great, and that's what it's about. We hate nights off on tour, you know.
Can't be bad then, can it? Really,
we've got a live album coming out in September, live album and DVD, live at the Roundhouse.
So you got it all going. You got your tour. You got hopefully a new book on the horizon. You've still got your existing book. You're still playing bass. You're doing your lockdown licks on YouTube.
Yep.
I mean, crikey, it's all going on, isn't it?
Well, you know, stuff.
It's just stuff I do.
Yeah.
So what is there that you haven't done yet then, Guy?
Not much. Oh, well, actually, the annoying thing, the only two things, left me as a player, was I always wanted to do one song with Peter Gabriel and Pete Townsend. And I am in an incredible, and back in 1987, right, I was on holiday in Thailand, and when I came home, I had all these answer messages from David Gilmour saying, do you want to play an Amnesty International gig with me and Kate Bush? I was like, no! Mm-hmm. No!
Of course I don't.
One of the only jobs I'll ever have to be. And then 3 months later, he called me to play for Floyd. So last year, I went on holiday to Thailand, right? You'd think I'd learn, wouldn't you? I went on holiday to Thailand and got a load of messages from Zach Starkey asking me to go and do a day in the studio with The Who.
Oh, no. Well, yeah. You couldn't write that,
could you?
That's
basically it, though. After that, that's all I need. Just one day with Pete Townsend in the studio and I'm done. That's it.
Yeah.
Frankly.
There you are then. That's it. That's on the horizon. That will now come to you. I have no doubt of it. Oh, that's incredible. Thank you very much. You take care. Speak soon.
Yeah, stay safe.
And you. Bye-bye. Okay.
Bye.
You've been listening to Cattails. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.